Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive's Employee of the Month, 2 months in a row. Leave a message at the...
Hey, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. Do not forget to buy lentils, or the lentil soup you're making for dinner will be sorely lacking. By the way, Mrs. Calloway says thanks for helping her bundle home and auto. She appreciates the extra savings, even though you kept using the word apropos incorrectly. But the main thing is, do not forget to buy, what was it? Something apropos the lentil soup. Sorry, I'll call you back.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 168 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Head on to iTunes, search Locked On Thunder, subscribe to the podcast there. Leave a review once you're on that page. Find us on audioboom.com. Log on to normantranscript.com. Check out my blog, Thunder Road. It's under the sports tab on the site. You can find all my Thunder coverage there. I'm on every day of the week, Monday through Friday, Wednesday episode today. Recording this Tuesday afternoon with my 13th time guest, Baker's Dozen, for John Hamm. You got I was trying to make a butcher joke about Hamm and Baker's Dozen, but I'm just going to lay out the groundwork of the joke, and I'll let you make it.
Oh, yeah, no pressure. Be funny now.
You're good at being funny now.
As long as I have a two-game lead on Royce, that's all I really care about.
You do. You have a two-game lead now. You pretty consistently have a 1-2-game lead on Royce.
I am basically the Clippers, and he's the Thunder right now.
There you go. Or you're Utah. You know what? Let's set it higher. Why don't you be Golden State, and he can be the Spurs?
Okay.
Let's have some more respect here.
Although it sure seems like he should be Golden State in that scenario. And maybe I should be maybe Phoenix. But, you know, I'll take it.
How about this? You can be Houston. Royce can be the Spurs. And Golden State can be the real John Hamm.
Okay. There we go. So,
how do you feel that I took your job for a weekend?
Yeah, I listened for the first 20-some-odd minutes. I was on the road. And you were great as always. Jerry was adequate at best. And no, I'm really glad that you got into the catapult technology. I mean, the questions I'm getting a lot from people, I mean, just around where I'm at or online or whatever, is all about, you know, players asking for rest. And I've been able to pipe up and say, no. I've recently been informed by Fred Katz of the Norman Transcript and Locked On Thunder. There is technology involved.
How do you feel about the whole rest? And for those unaware, John is a host over at 107.7 The Franchise in Oklahoma City, and he hosts a really good show, really good because of John, not because of his co-host Jerry Ramsey, who will never, ever be on this podcast, no matter how many times he asks. But John and Jerry host a really good show, the NBA Insider Show, on Saturday mornings, 10 a.m., I filled in for John on Saturday, which honestly, your job is so much fun. I had so much fun with, and Jerry is so funny, and he's so easy to work with.
Yeah, it's great.
I just had so much fun. I just went in, I talked about basketball for an hour, and then I just bounced. It was fun.
Yeah, it is. It flies by. As a matter of fact, even yesterday morning, just to sidetrack a bit, I filled in on the morning show, which is 3.5 hours. With Mike Steele, and time flew. It was 5:30. Then I looked up, and it was almost 9. It's that much fun. It moves that quickly. Radio can be some good stuff.
Yeah, it's you know, I was a radio major when I was in college.
Yep.
Yeah, I was a terrible student, but I was a radio major. School was not kind. Well, school was incredibly kind to me because they actually let me leave it with a degree, despite
right.
the fact that I was not very kind to school. How do you feel about this rest stuff? This is a hot topic now. The Adam Silver memo, the Cavs rested their stars on a Saturday night ABC game last Saturday, the Saturday before the Spurs and Warriors played. It's supposed to be a huge game. was going to be a huge game. The Spurs rested their guys. The Warriors rested their guys. Adam Silver sent out a memo basically saying that ownership has to be involved in these sorts of decisions. Where do you stand in this?
My stance is that the NBA has been dragging behind the teams that figured this out years ago. I applaud Iron Men from back in the day, whether it's AC Green and his consecutive game streak, Karl Malone, John Stockton, Michael Jordan played all 82. I remember Ron Harper one year because he had so many injuries at one point in his career. It was a goal of his to play all 82 games. And like, I appreciate that. And I appreciate that if James Harden wants to play all 82 like he's talking about. But I don't turn a blind eye to science. And if there's science and technology and there's, you know, actual evidence that this is beneficial, then yeah, we need to pay attention to it. I feel like that's one factor. I also feel like, I mean, you listen to Cavs GM Griffin, David Griffin, telling Ramona Shelburne, like, look, my job is to win titles. Well, that's the expectation that has now been set by, you know, everyone who tweets out RINGZZZZZ and, you know, their discussions begin and end with the almighty ring and it's the Ricky Bobby mentality. Well, yeah, I mean, we've completely devalued the regular season every time you do that. So I honestly think it's, you know, probably more the former than the latter, but those are kind of some factors I think that are part of this.
I think the problem with this whole thing is, with fans being angry, there's not really very much nuance to the rest. Shocking, right? Not that much nuance to a public conversation. There's not... People think that because I say the teams are doing nothing wrong, you can't get upset with the teams, their goal, coach's goal, player's goal, GM's goal, training staff's goal, their goal, well, training staff's goal is to keep people healthy. Mm-hmm. But the overall goal of the organization is to win as much as possible and have as much success on the court as they possibly can. Mm-hmm. Now, to think that the players, the coaches, the medical staff, the front office, that they're unaware that this is an issue for the fans is crazy. But this is not their fault. This is the fault of the league. Yep. And I think when people say that they're upset about this, and when I say, well, you can't really be upset about LeBron resting. First of all, it's not his call. Second of all, you can't be upset with David Griffin. You can't be upset with Tyronn Lue. You can't be upset with their doctors. This is what they're trying to do, because for all those years that LeBron couldn't win a championship, are you telling him right now not to prioritize winning a championship? And if you were with me, you'd see that I'm putting air quotes around couldn't win a championship.
Right.
But for all those years that the public dialogue was LeBron can't win a championship, he can't step up, how in the world are you going to criticize him for prioritizing trying to win a championship over whatever else, whatever BS is out there? And I'm not saying that the anger or the frustration, maybe the anger is unjustified, but the frustration, I'm not saying it's unjustified. It is completely justified. It just needs to be, it's got to be rational. It needs to be directed at the right place. And if you want to be upset with the league, if you want to be upset with the league for insisting on an 82-game season, when everybody involved and everybody who plays it says it's too long and that the regular season games are relatively meaningless, especially for teams like Cleveland and Golden State and San Antonio, who are going to win 60-plus or 50-plus or whatever it is, and they're going to get a high enough seed to where they're comfortable with it. If you're going to devalue the regular season, if you're going to schedule back-to-backs, if you're going to schedule back-to-backs in nationally televised games, that's a league issue. That's not a team issue. That's a league issue. You have to look wider than it. And I understand Silver sending out a memo to the owners. That's his way of doing it. And they are starting the season a little bit earlier next year. They're shortening the preseason, starting the season a week earlier. And that's probably going to eliminate some of the back-to-backs. And I imagine after this year, they're going to take a hard look at the schedule and make sure, all right, Saturday night ABC games, Thursday night TNT games, let's not do back-to-backs. But that's a problem. It's a problem, and it's a self-induced problem from the league. Not from the teams, from the league. We could have predicted. I don't think you could look at the beginning of the year and say, okay, well, this team's on a back-to-back. That game, they're definitely going to rest guys. But with the amount of nationally televised games where teams are on back-to-backs, very easy to predict that their guys are going to be resting. Whether it's on the front end of a back-to-back, the back end of a back-to-back, a lot of this stuff is predetermined too.
Yep.
Like Kevin Love just came back. People are like, how is Kevin Love resting? He just came back. He doesn't need rest. A lot of this stuff is predetermined. It's based on data. It's based on numbers. And it's predetermined coming out of there. Like they knew Kevin Love was going to rest in at some point. And it's all just like directly get frustrated, but just directly at the right place, because that's how you can be productive.
Right, exactly. And, you know, Russell Westbrook, when he came back a couple of seasons ago when he had mid-season knee surgery, he did not play in back-to-backs the rest of the season. And so Scott Brooks would determine, well, do I want to rest him on the first night of a back-to-back or, you know, the second night? And so that was, again, a medical reason, because there's really no need to have this guy that's just had his third knee surgery pushing through back-to-backs at this point in the season. So, and then I thought Mark Cuban also had an excellent point. You know, NBA teams have to schedule around so many things at their arenas, right? Staples Center holds every self-congratulatory award show that is in Hollywood. Chesapeake Energy Arena, Neil Diamond is coming in, and I don't know, Carrie Underwood's going to be coming through, and you know, they have to schedule around those. And so that's when the schedule makers are like, well, look, you know, the Thunder are getting these 4 days off weirdly at this point in the season because we can't move this one game over here because Chesapeake Energy Arena is having a tractor show or whatever you have. So that's the other problem as well, sharing these arenas.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And it's tough. It's tough to schedule all this stuff with 30 teams. And like you said, some of them, it's not just concerts. I mean, some of them share with hockey teams. You have to work it out with the NHL too. That's tough. I mean, I am more and more every day becoming a proponent of preseason should be 2-3 games and start the regular season in the middle of October. Next year it's going to start a week earlier. Start it a week or two earlier than that. Just start it in the middle of October. Start it going up against the baseball playoffs. I don't know if there's like an unwritten rule of doing it going up against the baseball playoffs, but if there is, they're kind of breaking it next year anyway when they started on like October 24th or whatever it is, and that's going to be during either the LCS or the World Series for sure. World Series went into November last year, so it's silly. Just start it earlier, eliminate those back-to-backs, at least eliminate them during nationally televised games, and you're not going to have this problem to nearly the degree. I also think like fans are a little too entitled. And I understand the frustration, and I don't want to seem too out of touch with the common fan, but because like I realize how cool it is that like we get to go to games and we get to sit in awesome seats and watch.
Well, you do.
fair enough. But we get to go to games and not pay for it and watch Russell Westbrook play up close. And like, we have really cool jobs. And yes. I certainly don't mean to lose touch with the common fan because of that. But like, when baseball players have been resting for years, baseball players have been failing to play 162 games for years. And you just, you know, people buy a ticket to see Barry Bonds in his prime and Barry Bonds sits, or people buy a ticket to see A-Rod in his prime, or people buy a ticket to see Albert Pujols in his prime. And those guys sit, and it's just, you don't see the uproar. And people will say, well, that's because you've got a three-game series, or you have a team coming more than just one time to the city, so the fans have the opportunity to see him again. That is such a ridiculous response. How many fans are saying, oh, Pujols is here, I'm going to buy tickets for every single game of the three-game series? That's not a thing.
Right.
That's such a stupid response. That's not right. And you're not going to say, well, Pujols didn't play today. I don't know why I'm using such outdated responses. You're not going to – like outdated examples. Why am I not saying Mike Trout?
Yeah, I was going to say like, Mike Trout might be.
Yeah, my baseball like analogies are way back in like 2004. But like, yeah, I said A-Rod, Bonds, and Pujols. But yeah, so Mike Trout, no one's going to say like, oh, Mike Trout, I got the tickets for the game on Saturday. Mike Trout didn't play, so now I guess I'm just going to buy tickets for the game on Sunday. Like, if your issue is you spent money to see the guy and you're not seeing him, well, that doesn't really solve it. You now just spent twice as much money to see the guy. It's still a problem, at least by those standards. So like, I think part of it is the precedent set. It certainly bothers me when people say, well, guys in the past weren't doing it, so why should guys nowadays have to do it? silly response for so many reasons. Just the way it's evaluated, the way it's talked about kills me.
Players don't play in Chuck Taylor's anymore either. You know?
Yeah, well, you know why that bothers me the most? It bothers me the most because if rest does give you an advantage, because it makes you more rested by definition, if it does give you an advantage and your opponent is doing it and you're not, then it's going to be harder for you to play all 82 because you're going up against more rested and thus better competition. And you are going to need to start resting. And then it trickles down. That's what this happens. When someone is doing something that makes them better and you are not doing it, it relatively makes you worse.
Yep.
So it's a ridiculous response.
It really is. Quick check here. A couple of points to add on to that. One, only three baseball players played 162 last season.
I will not be able to guess. Were they Barry Bonds, Albert Pujols,
and Ryan Sandberg?
Yeah,
exactly.
Sandberg, exactly.
So, I mean, there's that. And then the other thing, too, Carl Malone's take on this the other day, I mean, that get off my lawn take, he did that thing where he invoked the first responders in the military, and it's – You devalue those organizations by comparing them to entertainers. These are totally different professions that, by the way, these entertainers don't have to make like live and die decisions day by day. It seems like that seems like a mic drop for people that if I can just say, well, NBA players need rest, but you know, military don't, mic drop. No. Let's not go there. Let's compare apples to apples. This is an entertainment industry with organized labor. And you know, it's just different. Let's just not intermingle the two or try to.
It's so ridiculous. It's so weird when players make that. You'd think players would be the number one demographic that would understand this.
Yeah.
Right?
You would think.
And current players always do. Current players always get it. And then for some reason, when some players retire, they just go into the mode of, it's like they wipe out their entire playing career.
Right.
You'd wish that some former players would use their former playing career to actually inform decisions.
Right.
It's so weird. Like, I feel like if a player said that to Karl Malone in 1996, then Karl Malone would have a totally different response.
You might.
It's
definitely
so
might. It's again, it's not a work ethic deal because we see, I mean, you want to tell me LeBron James doesn't have a fantastic work ethic? He kind of does. He's played 40,000 NBA minutes in his career in the regular season too. You know, it's again, science, technology, these are good things. Teams have figured this out years ago. The NBA's drug its feet behind.
Yep. And the other thing is that People struggle, and I understand this because you need to be more informed for this part. So this part is actually what I understand the most, as long as this hasn't been something that's been explicitly explained to someone. But the resting actually, in the long run, helps fans see players. Tim Duncan was good, like legitimately good,
right,
until he was 40.
Yeah.
Manu Ginobili is still legitimately good. And Bob Vulgaris made this point on Twitter today. Like, Manu Ginobili is still good. Like, LeBron James has played significantly more career minutes than Larry Bird and is still somehow in his prime.
Yeah.
He's closing in on Michael Jordan's career minutes, I think, if you include for playoffs and that kind of stuff, because he's made so many playoff runs. He's closing in on Jordan, and he's still in his prime. He's still the best player in the league. And it's in part because of the way the minutes have been distributed. It's in part because of all this medical technology that's helped. It really helps, and it helps prolong careers. So would you rather see, you know, I'm sure if you're one of the 20,000, 18,000 who got tickets for a game on that particular night, maybe you'd rather see LeBron that one time. But overall, you want to reach the most amount of fans? Would you rather see LeBron James for this random night on a Wednesday in the middle of March? Or would you rather have him at the top of his game for an extra 4 years?
Right. And two, to kind of piggyback on your point about about, you know, the fan base, when we're talking about what is going to be the agent of change here, it's not going to be like fans and the ticket buying process. It's going to be Disney. It's going to be Turner, because if they keep drawing low ratings and they can't sell the advertising, they're going to be the ones putting the heat on the league, because they're paying $2.4 billion a year to broadcast these games.
It's a lot of money.
Quite a bit of money. Again, the fans are important. There are fans that drove from Wichita, Kansas down here to watch LeBron play in Oklahoma City and almost didn't get a chance to. Like, I get their plight, and it's a problem. I don't think that, you know, if fans, quote unquote, stop buying tickets, and that's not going to be the case, that's not going to be the agent of change. It's the networks, and I think the networks have already gotten to the league's ear about this.
Yeah, no, I think you're 100% right on that. And again, like, to be clear, neither of our issues, like, neither of our official opinions on this is, neither of us think this isn't a problem. Like,
right.
We both think it's a problem. We just think it's important that people are educated in where they should direct their anger. Because I think it's a league problem, not a team's problem. Teams are doing what they need to do. Like, they're trying to win. And they're trying to elongate guys' careers as much as they can. You also kind of have a duty to look out for the best interests of your players. And if you have numbers and you have medical diagnoses and you have actual science that says this is the best thing for this player, for his career moving forward, for his health after basketball, this is the best thing for this guy, not even as a player, as a person. And I think a lot of times people struggle to think of players as people, but this is the best thing for this guy as a person, as a human being. And this is the best thing. There's something unethical about saying, all right, but you have to do this other thing because we want to make more money off of you.
Mm-hmm.
And I realize the players get paid a lot of money and that they have demanding jobs, but there is something unethical in that to me, in enforcing that sort of policy. And I think there are ways to fix it. There are ways to fix it without kind of playing fast and loose with the laws of ethics.
Yep. No, I definitely agree with you. Like you say, these are people. They do have jobs. Yes, they are playing a sport, but they have jobs. They're in the entertainment business. So, yeah, it's definitely an issue. But I agree with you wholeheartedly on where we need to be pointing fingers here.
John, I just want to take a quick second to talk about SeatGeek. Buying tickets online for sports and concerts has been a confusing process for a long time. It's always been hard to find the best deal for that game or show you want to go to, and none of those older ticket sites want to change that. But SeatGeek is different. They've come along and created an amazing app and website that makes it easier than ever for fans to buy and sell tickets. SeatGeek is always the first place I go to look for tickets to a game or concert. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and I just used it the other day to look at tickets for the OKC Dodgers, whose season is somehow right around the corner. Everything about SeatGeek is designed to make life easier for sports and music fans. SeatGeek does all the price comparison for you by searching multiple ticket sites and ensuring that you get the best possible deal. SeatGeek does all the work, and you save the time and money. And SeatGeek wants to help you get the most bang for your buck. That's why every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value. You'll immediately see any underpriced seats and be able to find the best deals that fit your budget. Best of all, my listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. To get your $20 rebate on tickets, download the SeatGeek app, go to the Settings tab, click Add a Promo Code, enter the promo code LO Thunder, that's LO like locked on, and SeatGeek is going to give you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code LO Thunder today.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily Oklahoma City Thunder podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thunder Sixers on Wednesday night.
Got that happening.
Game of the year.
Philadelphia, I'm trying to think who's healthy for them at the moment besides...
Hey, Saric.
Okay, probably the rookie of the year, maybe?
Yeah, I would vote for him. He's really good. Like, I think when Embiid first got hurt, there was kind of like should you vote for Embiid or because he's only going to play 31 games or somebody else? I mean, he is on a tear. Like, he's not... I'm pretty confident he's going to win it. And I don't think he's going to win it like by default. Like, I think he is winning himself that award with the way he's playing lately.
No, I agree. And yeah, I mean, I, as good as Embiid looked in those 31 games, I still just can't in good conscience give him the Rookie of the Year vote, even looking at the rest of the candidates there. I guess we're basically talking Šarić and Brogdon at this point, right?
Yeah, so I'm calling this up. So since February 8th, 19 games for Šarić, 31 minutes, 19.8 points, 7.8 rebounds, 3.7 assists, and he's shooting 48 from the field and 33 from three on 5.1 attempts a game. 81% from the line, too.
That's
power
good.
Power forward, man. Almost four assists a game for a rookie 22-year-old power forward. 20 points. He's a good rebounder. He's athletic as hell. Runs the floor well. Like, he's going to be legit. That guy's going to have a really good career, I think.
Yeah, I think so, too.
What a trade for them. They gave up Elfrid Payton for him.
I know. What a trade. Orlando. Sorry, Rob Hennigan.
Rob Hennigan. Šarić, not Šarić.
Sorry about you. Šarić about you. There we go.
He's good, though. I think he is. I don't think he's winning that award by default. I think he's legitimately earning that. Like, he is a legitimately good rookie. Like, he is earning that award right now.
He definitely is.
He's so much better of a passer than I ever realized. He's having some, like, 7 assists, 8 assists games. Where you see him move the ball both within the offense and you see him playmake on the break and stuff. And you're like, man, like, you know who he's got? He's got a little bit of Blake Griffin in him.
Mm-hmm.
He has some Blake, if Blake Griffin were a better 3-point shooter. But he has some, like I see, he's not as athletic as young Blake. He's a really good athlete, but like 22-year-old Blake was the best big man athlete in the NBA. But he's a really good athlete. But he's got some Blake in him with his ability to handle, his versatility, his passing ability is similar to Griffin's, because Griffin is one of the 2-3 most versatile passing big men in the NBA. Like, Draymond Green's probably one. And I think you can say him just with the different types of passes he's able to make because of his athleticism, because of his handle, because of the different positions he puts himself in on the floor. And like, he is, you know, Jokic is up there as well. Like, those three guys are probably the three most versatile passing big men. But Šarić is, like, that similar type of mold, you know?
Yep. Yeah, so we got that coming to town. Now, let me see here.
I'm interested to see Covington guard Westbrook, too. He's a great defender. I assume they'll put him on Westbrook.
I would think so. Yeah, I can't see them throwing TJ McConnell or TLC on him.
Right. He's a great defender. He's
Covington's
awesome
really player. Good. That's he's one of those guys that I kind of thought was, you know, fit, checked all the boxes of a Thunder player, and then they got Jeremy Grant. So
yeah, I mean, he's a better player than Jeremy Grant.
Yeah, I think there's no doubt about that. And hey, he dropped 24 and 13 against Orlando, which that's probably not all that difficult, but. That happened. Oh, that was an OT as well. How about that?
Yeah, I mean, he's got an all defense case. I don't think he'll make it because he doesn't have the reputation. He's not on the team. People aren't watching the Sixers. And quite frankly, I think the voting process for all defense is mostly flawed. But he's got a case. if somebody wants to tell me that Robert Covington is one of the four best defensive forwards or is having one of the four best forward defensive seasons this year, I'm fine with that. Like, he's great.
He's really good. It is. It's kind of like the Golden Glove of baseball.
Yeah.
Very reputation based, and guys tend to get it even if they don't really deserve it.
Mm-hmm. Who was the quote about? Someone didn't win a Gold Glove where they thought they should have, and the reporter asked him, "Why do you think you didn't get it?" And he responded, "I didn't hit well enough."
Exactly.
I forget who that was.
Yeah.
As a Yankees fan, I'll always remember the year that I so strongly, even though I was 9 years old, so strongly thought Tino Martinez should have won Gold Glove at first base in like 1998 or 99. And Rafael Palmeiro won Gold Glove. Which would have been fine, except he only played like 20 games at first base and he DH'd the rest of the year.
Yep. So, yeah, there's your NBA all-defensive team comparison.
Yeah, except who votes for Gold Glove in baseball again? Is it players, coaches and players, or is it media?
I thought it was media.
Yeah, it might be media.
I thought. I'm willing to be wrong on that, but that's what I thought.
Yeah, I don't remember how it is. Maybe it was different in, because that was 20 years ago.
Why don't you, let's bring in Royce real quick and have him Google that for us.
Yeah. Man, did you make it through that podcast?
I sure did.
Wow, I feel sorry for you.
Sure did. Well, you know, hey, I needed something in the background to keep my mind busy. It did its job.
Yeah. Who
just like people will do with this pod.
before we go, who's your ideal Thunder matchup for the first round? Like, what do you think would be the best series of the possible candidates? Of course,
The best series is probably going to be Houston. I mean, those teams, the three times they've played, the margin has been no more than three. I'm really curious to see how this team, if they look engaged, come out and play them post trade deadline. So I kind of like that. I know that there's kind of this fan mentality to get as high in the standings as possible. And sure, if you get to the five seed and you play Utah, maybe you have a good chance of winning that series. And then there's a freight truck waiting for you in round two. If you get in the sixth slot, you play Houston. Maybe your chances aren't as good as beating a Utah, but there's still a chance you could win that series. And, you know, I kind of like that path better than trying to get in as a four or five.
That's interesting. I think they should be gunning. I mean, they're going to be gunning for higher up no matter what, because they're not going to be, like, losing games so they can get the
That's
six.
Their mentality.
But I think, like, in a hypothetical scenario where that's it, I mean, I think I don't think they're going to get there, but they're close enough right now that we can have the conversation. I think getting the four would be so important for them because they are so much better at home than they are on the road.
Well, that's true. I can see that.
So I think getting a four and playing, whether it's Utah or the Clippers or Memphis, it would just be so important for them because I don't know if I trust them with a game seven on the road. I don't know if I trust them with the first two on the road and potentially falling down 2-0.
Right.
That's tough. That's tough. Yeah. And they have the largest disparity between home record and road record right now of any team in the league.
They would be in such better shape if they hadn't gone 0-4 in that stretch.
Yeah, they would.
Should not have gone 0-4. Just 2-2, which is, you know, in that stretch. And, you know, and they're in better shape. But to go 0-4, that might be the difference at the end of the season when we go back and look at where they land.
Yeah, no, look, if they go 2-2 in that stretch, which still would include, because it was four teams sub 500. It was two losses to Portland. It was Phoenix. It was Dallas. If they win the Phoenix game, they win one of the Portland games, that still means losses to Dallas, who is probably a little bit better than their record with the way that they're playing right now. And the loss to Portland, who I actually also think is better than their record. They've won 8 of 10 right now and have kind of been a different team since trading for Nurkic. But if they, you know, they're tied with Utah in the loss column.
Yeah.
If that's the case right now. And you know what? Maybe 50 wins is more in reach. All of a sudden they have to go, they have to go 10-2 the rest of the year to get 50. That's not happening. But if they have to go 8-4, you know, that's plausible. It may not for certain happen, but it's a realistic scenario we can have a conversation about. I don't think we can have a conversation about 10-2 the rest of the year. You know, maybe if they get really hot, maybe the Spurs rest all their guys and they get super hot, we can have it later. But at least right now, that doesn't really appear so realistic. So,
not really. I mean, it's not crazy to talk about, but it's not the most likely scenario.
Yeah. I mean, look, they've also, to even it out, they've also won some games they probably shouldn't.
True.
They've beaten Houston and they've got those two wins against Boston. Like that game in Boston, they shouldn't have won that game.
Yeah,
that was just Russ being unbelievable in the fourth quarter and then winning. And Isaiah Thomas was incredible in the fourth quarter of that game, too. He had 20. It was just an incredible basketball game, an incredible road win for them. You know, I think you can argue they probably shouldn't have won that Utah game, the one on the road where they really stunk it up in the fourth quarter. And Russ saved them again in the last one. They probably shouldn't have won the Phoenix game. The very first one where Russ had 44 shots, You could argue they shouldn't have won that game in Denver where Russ brought them all the way back in the fourth. Now, granted, there is a common thread here. They have Russell Westbrook, and Russell Westbrook does good things late in games.
Yeah.
That's the common thread. That, to me, is his best MVP argument. Just all of the games the Thunder should not have won. Look at what he did late to basically single-handedly win them the game.
Right.
But you know, that stuff, it just kind of, with good teams, not great teams, it often just kind of evens out or comes close to evening out throughout a year. You get some good losses, you get some bad losses, and then, you know, you end up with 47 wins.
Yep. Yeah, true. I mean, that's how the season goes. I mean, I never imagined they would go on the road and win at Toronto, let alone by, you know, 21 points. That is kind of the fun of the season. It's just, I think it's the fact that they just played so badly in that four-game stretch. And maybe that's a good thing. Maybe that was the wake-up call they needed. And you know, because I don't necessarily think that, you know, bad losses are just the most worst thing ever. No, I mean, you can take things from that, and I think Billy Donovan talked about that. You find out what you're doing wrong, and you're going to make a decision. Are we going to fix this or not? So if that was the turning point they needed, maybe it's worth it.
Yeah, maybe. Sometimes that stuff is worth it. You're right. Like, look at the way Westbrook has played since the port, that last loss was
the 58-point game.
Yeah, the 39-shot game where nobody else took more than nine shots. And after that game, he didn't play well in the Golden State game on either side of the ball, but with the way that he's come out passing against San Antonio and against Utah and against Toronto also, and Brooklyn, he had 8 assists in the first quarter and 19 in the game. And coming into the game last night, he was averaging over 14 assists a game in the winning streak. And the way that he's been distributing, like, that's when he's at his best. And he won't say it, because he thinks that it's him, you know, it's him being admitting some vulnerability. And,
right.
And it's also him, I think he thinks that he's kind of feeding, giving food to the critics when he says, well, I took too, because he's kind of implying, well, I took too many shots in that game. And and I needed to go back and correct it. But people make mistakes. The best players make mistakes and go back and realize, all right, that didn't work. I got to go back and correct this. And I think that is what happened with him. And look, it's working. I mean, that's what great players do. They do something wrong. Great players aren't perfect. They do something wrong. They go back. They realize what they did wrong. And then they stop doing that thing wrong. And he's been, you know, give him a pass in the Golden State game. He was bad on both sides of the ball. He was especially bad defensively. But everyone, he's as much as people don't want to give it to him, he's still a human being. And he's allowed to have a bad game every once in a while. But he, in that five-game winning streak, that was the best, in my opinion. Even though he was shooting, I think, worse than 40% from the field during that streak, best basketball he's played all season.
No, I agree with that. And it was noticeable, that San Antonio game, when he came out and opened, with, you know, opening the game, you could tell within the first few minutes, like, this looks different. It seems like, I don't know if there was a giant meeting where they figured this out, or, you know, what happened. But clearly something, people realized what was wrong and put an effort in to fix it.
Well, that's the thing about Russ. Like, people say he's not a good passer. He's a great passer. He is just not always a willing passer. And it's important to distinguish those two things. Now, being a willing passer goes into being a great passer. But in terms of seeing things, recognizing stuff, the pure ability to make some of the passes that he's able to do, there are so few people who can do it. Sometimes he just thinks he's a little bit of a control freak. He's a lot of bit of a control freak. And sometimes he thinks, I got to take this over by myself. And he's never going to be Chris Paul. He's never, of course not. He's never going to be that. It's just not in his DNA. But he sees these things. Like, he's a great passer when he wants to do it. And that's why you see these stretches sometimes where it's just like, my goodness, look at the way that he's just facilitating this offense. And it's not a coincidence. Thunder, going into the Golden State game, they were 6th in offensive efficiency this month. Not a coincidence that he's playing like that and they're 6th in offensive efficiency.
Yep. And Golden State has a habit of blowing a lot of things up. So, including Twitter, when everyone was wanting to, you know, trade player, fire guy, in the midst of a very, very humiliating loss to Golden State. Look, that's what's going to happen. A lot of teams are going to fall victim to them this year and in the postseason.
Yeah. All right, John, before we go, I want you to give me one scenario in your life, if you can even do it, Can you give me, this is a conversation I was having with an unnamed media member yesterday.
Okay.
Not an OKC media member.
Okay.
An unnamed media member. Has there ever been a scenario in your life where you have been both at the same time furious and bewildered? It's hard
to
be
possible.
It's hard to be furious about something, but also be confused by it.
Right. Yeah. Furious and bewildered. I've been both. There are just some things in life that you cannot do simultaneously. Like the human body is incapable of doing. I won't get any more detail than that. But there are some things that we just cannot physically do at the same time. And I think emotionally, you cannot be furious and bewildered at the same time.
It's tough. I think there might be scenarios where you can do it. Like I think maybe some people are furious and bewildered about resting stars. That's a furious and bewildered thing, right? Because they're like. But I feel like the confusion has to be the thing is, if you're furious and bewildered, it's got to kind of be by definition irrational, right? Because you're admittedly confused about the topic if you're bewildered.
Right.
And
exactly.
So if you're confused about the topic and you're still angry about it, that means you're making up your judgment before you have the information on the topic. Right?
Yeah.
Can you be furious about your bewilderment? Like you're so confused that it angers you?
That it just makes you mad? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, possibly.
So maybe I like walk into like an advanced calculus class and they're taking a test and I'm like, oh, wow, I was supposed to be in like the dumb person calculus class and now I have to take this test. And I'm looking at it and I'm so confused and I'm like so angry they put me in this class. So maybe in that case, I'm furious and bewildered.
Yeah, maybe.
It's tough. It's tough to come up with scenarios in which someone can be both furious and bewildered in a rational manner.
Which is why I cast a lot of doubt that the source or sources of this info came from Golden State management, someone directly involved day to day.
I don't know what you're talking about. I was just randomly coming up with words like furious and bewildered.
Oh, you weren't tying that back to any recent event of any sort. Oh,
nope.
Okay. See, that's me jumping to conclusions there. That's my mistake.
Yep. No, don't make me furious.
Okay.
What do you have to plug? Anything at BR? Anything at the franchise? What do you got?
Not a whole lot at the moment. Basically just again, our franchise NBA Insiders or Thunder Insiders show. The name kind of changes. I don't think we've completely settled on if it's Thunder Insiders or NBA Insiders.
I think you guys need a branding intern.
We definitely need something. We need a logo. That would settle the whole thing because now it's pretty much set in stone. So we got that going on and, other radio works where I just chatter.
All right. Sounds lovely. And you can remember I am on every weekday, Monday through Friday, iTunes to subscribe to Locked On Thunder, questions, comments, email lockedonthunder@gmail.com and find me on Twitter @FredKatz, FREDKATZ. John, you're John M. Ham.
I am.
JonMHamm. You can log on to normantranscript.com and see all my Thunder stuff up on Thunder Road. It's under the sports tab on the site or just normantranscript.com/sports/Thunder Road. Back tomorrow after the 76ers game, wrapping that up and talking about whatever the heck happens on Wednesday night. Until then, Locked On Thunder is locking up.